will call to order the February 1st, 2023 Board of Directors meeting of the Eastern Municipal Water District.
Ask Director Corona, would you like to lead us in the
flag salute this morning?
We begin. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May I get the board secretary to call the roll and to tell the public how to participate remotely?
Yes. First, we'll do roll call. Director Corona?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
President Pauly is here. Our legal counsel is here, and Director Record is absent. We will go over the guidelines for virtual participation in EMWD board meetings. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking.
Thank you very much. I'd like to ask our legal counsel, I understand we need to add an agenda item to the consent calendar, if I'm correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. The Plan Act allows for items to be added to the matter arose subsequent to the. And my understanding is that there is action on a resolution that. And is the resolution concerning the teleconference meeting. Motion to add to as item G, proposed resolution concerning the provisions of the Brown Act at section 54953.
I'll make the motion. Second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote on that, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0. Director Record absent, adding item G to the consent calendar.
Thank you,
Mr. Legal Counsel. With that, I will ask our Public Affairs Director if anyone has submitted cards for public comment on items not on the agenda.
I do not have any.
Very good. Thank you for that. That will go to item 2 on our agenda, which are executive reports. Mr. Mawad, good morning, sir.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. My report is included in your packet under new and ongoing items. As you may be aware, last week, the Department of Water Resources announced an increase in the state water project allocation for Table A from 5%, increasing up to 30% allocation, which was a pleasant surprise by all of us in the water industry. The January 26 announcement came after an exceptional several weeks of precipitation and snow up north, which currently stands, the snowpack currently stands at 218% of average for this time of year. However, Department of Water Resources did cautiously warn that the groundwater basins are still overdrafted and many reservoirs are still below appropriate levels or desired levels. Department of Water Resources will continue to conduct snow surveys at the beginning of each month. In fact, today is we're waiting to hear what the today's announcement will be as far as the snowpack surveys, and they will continue to update the state water project allocation accordingly. Considering metropolitan storage is still depleted and the Colorado River conditions are still bleak, Metropolitan Water District is continuing on the path to take action potentially in April of this year regarding a water supply allocation plan that would be effective in the summer. So we are engaging that process, and obviously we will continue to update the board as that develops. As you may recall, when we had Metropolitan's Water Resource Manager Brad Coffey recently present to our board, one of the questions was, what do you want to see in terms of allocation on the state water project to avert a water supply allocation plan? And his response was somewhere between 50 to 60% state water project allocation. we're not quite there yet, but hopefully if we do have additional storms, the allocation will increase accordingly. Talking about Metropolitan, I wanted to mention to the board that Metropolitan will be hosting an in-person Board of Directors retreat in Temecula on February 13th and 14th. Director Armstrong and I will be participating in that retreat. The purpose and priority of the retreat is to take inventory of current conditions and challenges facing Metropolitan and discuss strategies and ways to meet those challenges. Metropolitan's general manager and Chair Ortega are also exploring fundamental updates to Metropolitan's business model. So we are looking forward to those conversations in mid-February. Next, I wanted to update the board on one of our key initiatives to enhance water supply reliability to our region. As you're aware, we have been for the last several years advancing the Lake Skinner and EM11 interconnection with MET. That is a project to be able to supply additional treated water flows from the Skinner filtration plant. As part of our efforts, we've developed various alignment evaluations, and the preferred alignment, as you may recall, is one that would utilize the Metropolitan easement as well as the Metropolitan decommissioned San Diego pipelines 1 and 2. As we've advanced the process, including engaging legal counsel and Metropolitan staff, we will be, and I will be presenting to the Metropolitan general managers this Friday, an overview of our project and our request to acquire easements and the barrels so we can build that 10-mile transmission system from the Skinner filtration plant all the way up to Simpson Road. Following the presentation to the Metropolitan general managers, we'll receive feedback, but we will be bringing, or Metropolitan staff will be bringing that item to the Metropolitan board sometime this spring of this year. Also, I wanted to make you aware of EMWD's participation in a statewide PFAS survey. As you're aware, there's ongoing legal, legislative, regulatory, and other issues revolving around PFAS. And to that end, we have partnered with a number of other agencies to conduct a survey to understand the public's perception relative to PFAS. And once the public is provided with additional information, do their positions change? I think that's going to help us, and frankly, all the water agencies, better focus our messaging relative to PFAS and better conduct outreach. So we're looking to roll out that survey later this month. Again, this is a joint effort with others, including Western Municipal Water District, LA County Sand District, Las Virgenes, and many others throughout the region. Under items of interest to the board, I wanted to let you know that last week I had the pleasure of participating in the American Water Summit in LA. I was a panelist on a roundtable discussion. I had the opportunity to highlight EMWD's success relative to our brackish groundwater program and our proposed purified water program and our ongoing effort to minimize brine generation. It was a really good opportunity to share information with water industry leaders from throughout the U.S. and frankly from Israel and other parts of the world. And finally, I will be participating in a workshop later this month with several others, general managers from throughout the state, 15 other general managers. This is a working group that we've established to better quantify the impacts of climate change in terms of what is the storage and supply deficits facing not only urban water users, but ag and environmental. So as part of that collaboration, we'll be meeting Sacramento later this month to further those conversations and understand better how we can coalesce around strategies that align in our mutual interest. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Director Schlossman.
Yeah, I have two questions.
Yep.
On the use of the MET pipeline, is staff recommending one thing, one way or the other, MET staff?
Yes, staff, Metropolitan staff is supportive of our ask, which is to acquire an easement as well as the barrels. Those facilities have been decommissioned for more than 20 years, and there is no identified future need for those facilities. In addition to Metropolitan's technical staff, we've engaged Metropolitan's legal counsel to understand if those easements are transferable to EMWD. And I know Stephen and MET's legal team have looked at that, and they are transferable. So to answer your question, Dr. Austin, yes, Metropolitan staff is supportive of our ask.
Okay, that's great. And then our wastewater treatment plant, 55.3 million gallons a day, that's up from normal?
It is, and we have seen a steady increase of flows, and I think especially during significant rain events, we'll see that number increase slightly. But yes, that is a little bit higher than the average we've seen. I don't know, Matt, if you want to comment on that further.
Yeah, when we get a lot of rain, the treatment plants will see elevated influent numbers for a few weeks, and then things will trail back off around, you know, the 49 MGD that we typically get.
What contributes to the increase? I mean, the rain?
Yeah, the ground becomes saturated with water, especially down in Temecula. Like the tributary to the Temecula plant is where we see most of it. A lot of water comes through our Warm Springs lift station. And so that's part of our asset management efforts. With the camera van we recently put into operation is to do inspections and find out where water is getting into the system.
What we also have done, Director Slauson, is if we see an unusual spike in water entering our wastewater system, we will look at areas where there's ponding waters that could potentially enter manholes. As you know, manholes are not perfectly sealed. So we have gone out and we have investigated those potential areas of ponding stormwater that may be impacting our sewer collection system, and we've taken action to seal those manholes and take corrective action.
Other questions? I'd like to make a quick comment. I'd say Director Armstrong, less than a month on the board at Met, he already has the entire Met board coming out to our service area. So for a conference.
That's great how you plan that, Jeff.
Nice work on your part on that. So thank you, sir. I know Laura's not here today. Dan, do you have anything for us?
I do not. Laura's at the Municipal Finance Officers Conference in Sacramento this week, so I'm filling in.
Outstanding. Thank you for that. Nick?
Nothing to report this morning.
Anaya?
Good morning, Holly and members of the board. Just a couple of highlights I wanted to share with you. A couple of large CIP projects that are currently out to bid. One is at our San Jacinto Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility, where we have a current project out to bid to rehabilitate the Plant 1. That plant was constructed in the mid-60s and was taken offline in 2013 following the Plant 2 construction at that facility. With the growth in the area, as well as advancing our PWR, it's time to rehabilitate Plant 1 and bring it back online. Bids are due for that project on Thursday. Engineer's estimate is about $20 million. The second project I wanted to highlight, we reached a key milestone in our Paris North groundwater contamination, remediation, and prevention program this week. The largest component of that program, the construction of the centralized treatment plant and the equipping of the six wells, went out to bid on Monday to a pre-qualified list of six contractors. Bids are due currently on March 14th, and the construction engineer's estimate for that is about $80 million. So a couple of big projects out to bid that I wanted to inform you of.
Thank you. And finally, Matt.
Morning. Just wanted to give you an update on discharge. You know, we had recent rains again, so discharge has continued at about 32 MGD. Our storage is remaining pretty stable so far at 81%, and demands for recycled water have remained below 3 MGD. So we're going to have to discharge for at least another week, maybe something like 2 weeks, depending on the weather. But we are looking at demands closely, and we'll be topping storage off. Our goal is to top that storage off to 90% before demands pick up again. So I'll keep you updated as that unfolds. We got some rain, which brought our diversions at Grant Avenue Ponds up to 585 acre feet so far for the year. And perhaps of interest is that the Colorado River Aqueduct shutdown begins today for the month of February, so Met can do maintenance on that system. Shouldn't really be an impact to Eastern. We'll get alternative water supplies to keep our Paris filter plant running in the meantime. That's it.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions for any of our... With that, we'll go on to item three, which are our consent calendar. Do any members of the board wish to request a separate vote on any items or questions?
Move the consent calendar.
None. Director Corona moves the consent calendar. Director Armstrong is a second on it. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Polly.
Aye.
Director Corona.
Aye.
Director Slauson.
Aye.
Director Armstrong.
Aye.
And that is 4-0. with Director Record absent. Now go on to our action calendar, item A, which is to approve and authorize a contract with Hunskecker and Associates of Irvine, California for $154,000 for an engineering resources of Southern California for $370,000 for the Getz Road Sewer Design Project and an additional appropriation of $669,000. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Daniel Meacham, and I'm an associate civil engineer here at EMWD, and it's my pleasure to present to you the request for the Getz Road Sewer Final Design. Before I get started, I would like to introduce Eric Howard of Engineering Resources of Southern California.
Thank you for coming this morning, sir.
And Rich Norton of Hunsaker & Associates as well.
And thank you for coming this morning.
Quail Valley is located within the city of Menifee near Canyon Lake, and as many of us know, they've been struggling historically with septic system failures in the area. This is also a disadvantaged community, and since the early 2000s, EMWD has been a partner trying to find a long-term solution to address these septic systems and provide a sewer system for the community. Recently, we have completed a feasibility study for subarea 4 and a preliminary design for the necessary backbone sewer improvements within Getz Road. And the subarea 4 is one of the most densely populated regions, also has one of the highest rates of septic system complaints as well for within Quail Valley. So as you can see in the figure, there's a green alignment that represents our existing gravity sewer within Getz Road, which terminates on the upstream end in subarea 7. We need to extend that backbone sewer along the red alignment in order to provide sewerage service to subarea 4. And that is the core request today, that we are able to pursue final design of that backbone sewer in order to allow us to advance a solution in subarea 4. This backbone sewer is approximately 3,000 linear feet along Getz Road, and it can be fairly deep in some locations, up to 28 feet. And to facilitate lateral connections, we also propose the construction of a more shallow, normal depth collector sewer that will be utilized to collect sewerage from the properties aligning Getz Road as well. There's also an aging 8-inch water main within Getz Road that's nearing the end of its useful life. And to allow for a proper separation between the new sewer lines and then to address the aging 8-inch force main, we're also recommending a partial replacement of that water line to get some new piping in the ground while we have the road torn up for the new sewer, as well as provide that minimum separation we're looking for ultimately. Some key challenges with this project will be traffic control. It's a two-lane road and it's a fairly busy thoroughfare in the area. And the topography is very challenging. It's not only a hill that's winding, as you can see, along this alignment, but there's also shallow bedrock that will present some key challenges on this project as we move forward. In December, we issued a request for proposals to four firms and two proposed. EMWD staff reviewed these proposals based on the criteria shown. Hunsaker & Associates had the best proposal for this project, and they showed that their experience, past history with EMWD, and understanding of the key project components makes them the best firm to select for this work. And their base fee came in at around $100,000, but they also had some optional tasks that we believe add value to the project. So the total fee, including optional tasks, is $154,000 to pursue final design. Hunsaker was competitively selected, and they've also performed similar work for us in the past successfully, and their scope of work will include a verification of the PDR, also some investigation into whether or not we want to pursue open cut construction or other means such as trenchless with rock cutting heads to allow us to minimize impact on the overall community during construction. Once we have a path forward solidified for the means of construction, we'll pursue final design through bid services, as well as traffic control plans for this project. In addition to the request to contract with Hunsaker & Associates, we would also like to recommend a contract with Engineering Resources of Southern California. Eric Howard has been a part of every major Quail Valley project with EMWD since we started back in 2005, and he has tremendous historical knowledge of the area and EMWD's decisions and direction on past projects and studies, as well as the Quail Valley community. And we would like to recommend a two-year contract with the RSC to provide staff augmentation to support us as we advance not only the Getz Road backbone, but the upcoming Subarea 4 design as well. Their effort will include technical assistance and sharing their historical knowledge and guidance, as well as reviewing submittals from the consultants performing the design. Staff negotiated a fee for this effort in the amount of $370,000. With approval from the board today, we would issue notice to proceed immediately for the backbone sewer and also the support from ERSC. And we would anticipate completing CEQA later this year and then shortly thereafter final design, with the target of constructing this project in the beginning of 2024. Today, staff recommends execution by the general manager, a contract with Hunsaker & Associates in the amount of $154,000, as well as execution by the general manager, a contract with Engineering Resources of Southern California in the amount of $370,000, administrative award of any necessary contracts required to support the project through the bidding phase, as well as a total appropriation of $669,000. With that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
For a motion? Motion by Director Slauson.
Second.
Second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Cronin?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 in the affirmative with Director Record absent. And you are going to stay and do the next one, correct?
Yes, sir.
You did such a good job on that. We'll let you do it again.
Thank you.
Item B is to approve and authorize award of contract with Kennedy Jinks Consultants Incorporated, $420,000 for the Saboba Sewer Project, and appropriation of $577,000.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to present the Saboba Sewer Preliminary Design Project. And before I get started, I would like to introduce Ed Yang, representing Kennedy Jinks Consultants.
Thank you very much for being here, sir.
This project is located within the San Jacinto Valley near the Saboba Resort and Casino on the northeastern end of the Hemet-San Jacinto area, shown in blue. A little bit of background on this project. There was an original lift station serving this community before the resort and casino completed construction in 2019 that was not sized adequately to serve the new casino. So in 2017, we entered a sewer service agreement with Saboba. And because of the truncated timeline, we did not have sufficient time to provide a long-term solution for the area that would account for all future hotel expansions and the build-out of the community. So the solution that we have today is an interim solution that included the new pump station, reusing the existing force main across the San Jacinto River, and that is sized to provide sewer service to the current hotel phase one construction that's in use now and the current build-out of the community. Because of the occupancy ratings in the hotel increasing, they've signaled to us that they are ready to start considering phase two construction for the hotel. And to get ahead of that construction and provide a long-term solution for the area, we're requesting a project to determine a path forward to provide that solution for the region. It will include three evaluations. One would be a gravity solution that would allow us to discontinue use of the existing lift station. Another solution would be to take a look at the existing lift station and determine what improvements may be able to serve the long-term needs of the community without having to construct a significant new infrastructure. And then the third alternative would be to evaluate whether or not we need a new regional lift station that's upsized to serve the long-term build-out plans for the area, including phase two of the hotel. Staff issued a request for proposals in February of 2022, and we received proposals from both consultants and reviewed them. Kennedy Jinks was selected based on their past experience and their understanding of the project needs. I would like to note that that request was made and reviewed with Saboba, and although we came to an agreement on the proposed scope and approach, they did indicate that they wanted to consider septic to sewer conversion of their tribal lands. Now, the decision on that would actually impact the flow that we would be receiving in our facilities. So we put this request on hold at that time while they pursued a study to determine if they wanted to pursue septic to sewer. They have finished that study and determined they would like to pursue septic to sewer conversion. And that information has armed us with the ability to advance this project forward, which is why we're here today. The scope of work will include geotechnical investigations and a scour analysis of the Santa Ana River to determine how deep we need our infrastructure to protect it from future scour and erosion, as well as an alternative analysis, again, to look at those three options of gravity and pump solutions for long-term service in the area. With approval by the board today, we would issue notice to proceed immediately, and we would be looking to complete the preliminary design in November with a final design completion to be determined. Our request today is execution by the general manager, a contract with Kennedy Jenks Consultants in the amount of approximately $420,000. Administrative award of contracts necessary to complete the design through the preliminary design phase, and a total appropriation of approximately $577,000. With that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Questions on this item? A motion out there, motion by Director Armstrong, second by Director Corona. Get a roll call vote, please.
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absence. Thank you. Great job today. Hope to see you back up here on other items.
Yes, sir. If I can interject, I wanted to mention to the board that tomorrow, sadly, is Daniel's last day with the EMWD. He is.
He won't be coming back.
He is relocating to Missouri to join family, and he's been with us for the last 4 years. Been an incredible part of our engineering team managing wastewater projects. You know, Daniel's connection with EMWD is also very, very long, and his dad, Robert Meacham, was our plant manager at the Moreno Valley Reclamation Plant for many years. So I just wanted to express my appreciation, the whole district's appreciation, to Daniel's service, and wish him best in the next phase of his career. Thank you, Daniel.
Absolutely. All right, we will move on to item C, which is to approve and authorize amendment number one to the agreement with Corello Engineering, $576,000 for preliminary and final design, the Moreno Valley Regional Water Reclamation Plant 2A Rehabilitation Project, and an appropriation amount of $646,000.
Thank you, President Pauly, and good morning, members of the board. Before I begin, I'd like to introduce Graham Juby and Rajesh Dipulipudi, who are here on behalf of Corello Engineers.
Thank you so much for being here this morning.
So this morning, I will be recommending our advancement of the design services amendment with Corello for the MBRWRF Plant 2A Rehabilitation Project. The project will be located at Moreno Valley RWRF, which is located on the slide here. Background, MBRWRF does have two secondary treatment plants, Plant 1 and Plant 2. Plant 2 was constructed back in 1989 as part of the fifth expansion. In late 2022, we did commence construction of the Plant 2B equipping project. That project is slated to be completed in middle of 2025. So staff is currently advancing the rehabilitation project for Plant 2A, which is scheduled to commence as soon as the Plant 2B project is completed. Part of the Plant 2A project, we did an operational and condition assessment of the Plant 2 secondary clarifiers and noted some significant corrosion and issues that need to be addressed in order to continue with reliable service of the secondary clarifiers. Also in 2022, as part of the MBRWRF airline replace rehabilitation project, we did discover that the existing aeration air header that's buried has significant signs of corrosion and leaking. We can see some of the images here that show the reduction in the thickness of the pipe, and we can see bubbling at the surface. Also, Moreno Valley has our influent pump station, which currently sends flow to both Plant 1 and Plant 2. As far as The Plant 2A Rehabilitation Project is the second phase in a series of planned projects at MBRWRF. The third phase will require Plant 1 to be taken offline for either rehabilitation or replacement. So during this design, we're looking to evaluate the condition of the influent pump station to make sure that it is capable to divert all flows to Plant 2 once we commence the Plant 1 rehabilitation. Another item that we're looking to amend is a repaving of certain areas, Moreno Valley. As shown on this exhibit here, areas in gray are currently being addressed by the Plant 2B equipping project, which is currently in construction. The areas in red are in the current scope for the Plant 2A design. After discussions with plant staff, we did note some areas in blue that needed that show signs of excessive wear, so we're looking to add those to the scope of this project. So in summary, the amendment that we're requesting today is to add the design scope for the rehabilitation of the Plant 2 secondary clarifiers number 1 and number 2, a replacement of the corroded and leaking aeration air header, an assessment of the influent pump station and any necessary rehabilitation and modifications to the site facility paving. Upon approval by the board, we do have an estimated schedule to complete final design in April of 2024 with a construction advertisement of January of 2025. The reason for the gap between the two is, once again, we can't commence construction of this 2A project until Plant 2B is completed and in operation. Assuming construction advertisement in January 2025, we would complete the Plant 2A rehabilitation project in August of 2026. With that in mind, our recommendation this morning is to amend Corello's design contract in the amount of $576,000, an additional appropriation of $646,000, bringing the total project cost to $1.5 million through the bid and award phase. At this point, I'd be glad to take any questions.
Questions on this project? I'll look for a motion by Director Slauson, by Director Corona. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Passes 4-0 with Director Record absent.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great presentation. Thank you guys for coming. Item D, which is to adopt a resolution amending, adopt a resolution amending resolution 5111 of the Eastern Municipal Water District Administrative Code as it relates to index adjustments to the Board of Directors compensation for 2023. Mr. Mawad.
Thank you, President Pauley, members of the board. Today, we wanted to bring forward an item to look at the potential adjustment to the board members' rates of compensation. To that point, we did go out and do a survey of agencies as far as their compensation levels. And included in your board letter is a summary table, which shows that EMWD's current rate of $233 per service day is in the bottom half of, frankly, the information that we collected, still below many of the agencies, including neighboring agencies around us. So to that point, we wanted today to recommend an adjustment. As you know, recently the board took action to adjust employees' salaries by the consumer price index that we utilized for the negotiated MOU with the labor union. Based on CPI, that adjustment was 8.9%. Initially, and this board letter was prepared with a recommendation to recommend an adjustment of 8.9%, given that historically the board has not taken an adjustment every year. In fact, since 2018, there's only been one occasion when the board has taken an adjustment, and that was last year at a level of 4.5%. So initially, our thought was that there is a catch-up provision, but after further legal review and discussion this morning with Stephen, he has indicated to me that state statute may, in fact, limit the recommended adjustment to 5% because the adjustment that was taken by the board last year. Stephen, do you want to comment on that?
Sure. The statute that authorizes the board members to get a 5% increase in our code And it has a limiting provision to it, of course, limited to adjustment from the for each calendar year following the operative date of the last adjustment. I was working with staff. I looked at the last adjustment. And I own this confusion because it turns out the last adjustment was last adjustment was 2020, last year, of course. So, in my view, the conservative approach and the approach I'd recommend to this is 5% of the that, in fact, was the last. Apologies for any confusion. I thought the prior adjustment was earlier than it actually.
So with that, staff's recommendation is to approve an adjustment of 5% to the board's compensation rate, which is currently at $233. With the action of 5% increase, that would modify it to $245. With that, I'd be happy, and Stephen will be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Any questions on this?
I'll move it.
By Director Slauson, second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. I just clarify for Steve, the minutes will reflect the 5%.
Yeah.
Okay. Very, very good. I just want to... That we'll move on to item E, which is to approve and authorize an execution of conflict of interest consent for legal counsel representation. Mr. O'Neill, you're going to do this item, correct?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. As you know, earlier this year, or actually April of last year, I joined a firm called Alishar Grinder. And that firm, prior to my joining, had a city attorney for the city of Perry. Subsequent to April, when I joined, a partner in the firm sitting as the city attorney for the city. Currently, discussions with the city of Paris concerning water and sewer system. With the Marietta, where we have this project with the Los Alamos Hills, where we may be. To date, those discussions have been. Comedy and cooperation. State bar rules that govern the council require that if there is a potential for a client, I have to inform the client and get a written waiver. In this situation, I haven't encountered anything, but it's a possibility. I mean, something could go south with the city of Paris, or we could have a conflict with. See it, but today, but if it does happen, the unfortunate event, if we do get a situation where we are actually adverse, I will have to step out. My partner is the Marietta, I would have to step out for that specific question. So I'm asking the board if they could approve. Letter that's in your packet that acknowledges potential sets forth the rules of professional seven allowed me to continue.
Any questions on this? I had one.
I had read through your explanation, and I think the discussion were adverse. You have individual counsel, and we would normally do that anyway. I mean, we often, when there's actually a defense, we retain somebody else, depending on the specialty. And then the ethical wall discussion, I think, makes a lot of sense. And I think invariably, especially when you're dealing with a larger company, you're going to have some potential conflicts. And I think that's, you know, I would have confidence that you would put up the wall as soon as you recognize something coming about. So I have no problem. I support.
So Steve, the action we're taking today, is that only referring to the Paris and Marietta situation or for all future contracts the firm may have, or conflicts the firm may have in our service area?
No, this would be for the Paris and Marietta.
Okay.
So if something else came up again, something we'd have to take additional further actions.
I'll be back.
Okay, perfect. With that, I'm going to make the motion to support.
Second
by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Cronin?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Record absent.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Always want to keep us out of conflict with the state bar. We'll go to our informational items. Item A is building sustainable and resilient future. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauley and members of the board. A couple of board meetings ago, Director Record requested a presentation, really presenting a comprehensive view of the sustainable actions that EMWD has taken over the years, and really requested consideration on how we can further leverage those actions as we pursue grant funding or other potential advocacy initiatives throughout the community. He provided great information as we prepared this presentation. He's not here today, but we did present this to him at planning about a week and a half ago. He gave us some additional insight, which we've incorporated into this updated presentation. The good news is this is a very comprehensive presentation. We've done a lot, which is a great story. I'll also try to move quickly through it, though, because there is a lot there. And some of these initiatives you're very familiar with. But we wanted to present them in the context of building a sustainable and resilient future for EMWD and the communities we serve. We've really been a leader in sustainability and resiliency, and that's seen in our vision and our strategic priorities. Joe's going to be providing an update on our strategic priorities following this presentation, but we have really demonstrated a dedication to the responsible use and protection of our natural resources through our groundwater resources management, our water use efficiency initiatives, actions we've taken that mitigate climate change impacts, as well as the partnerships that we've established both in our communities and beyond. We've also been able to capitalize on our success in securing external funding, and that external funding has really allowed us to advance progressive initiatives as well as innovative projects. The commitment to sustainability here at EMWD really started with our establishment as a district. Early on, right in the beginning, we had a commitment to groundwater resources management. We were early adopters of utilizing recycled water. We have continued to advance opportunities to replenish our groundwater basin to protect that local resource for future use, and also establishment of our desalination program that's allowed us to utilize a portion of our basin that otherwise would be unusable. We've also, I believe we're viewed in the industry as really forward-thinking when it comes to water use efficiency with the implementation of our budget-based rates as well as AMI technology, as well as standards and removal of non-functional turf that has really reduced outdoor water use. As early as early 2000s, we have also taken action to mitigate climate change impacts. We have embarked on various solar energy projects. We've taken on initiatives to reduce vehicle emissions and associated greenhouse gases, as well as fuel cell and digester utilization projects. And we are also committed to partnerships that mutually benefit both EMWD as well as the partnerships that we enter into. And those have resulted in community betterment. Groundwater resources management, again, a lot of these are you're familiar with, so I'm going to go quickly. Matt pointed out this morning our stormwater capture that we've been able to capitalize on in these recent storms. And we have continued to operate our existing integrated recharge and recovery project and the partnership with other agencies, as well as our conjunctive use project that we recently embarked on in terms of advancing our Mountain Avenue West recharge pond. I mentioned this morning our Paris North groundwater cleanup. In addition to that program, we are also advancing wellhead treatment for PFAS removal. I also mentioned groundwater desalination. We currently are operating 3 desalters, which not only provide a sustainable water supply within that part of the basin, but it also improves the groundwater quality by removing 65,000 tons of salt annually. That is also a key element of our salinity management in terms of getting that salinity outside of our service area. Joe also mentioned earlier today that he had an opportunity to discuss our brine recovery options and minimizing our brine that is generated within our service area. We have also, through this board's direction, been committed to full utilization of our recycled water as much as possible. We have been able to advance innovative projects like our accelerated retrofit program, which provides a financial assistance to customers to convert their potable water systems to recycled water systems. Again, allowing us to further embrace and enhance the use of recycled water. And throughout those programs, we've also identified a way to ensure that that recycled water is utilized efficiently while combining the requirements for the removal of non-functional turf with some of those programs. Creativity and also keeping groundwater in the ground through our recycled water in lieu program, where we incentivize the use of recycled water for customers that have the opportunity to utilize it while minimizing their use of groundwater. And the next stage of our recycled water program to ensure that we continue to utilize 100% of the recycled water generated in our service area, as well as continuing to improve the quality of our groundwater in our basins, is the advancement of our PWR program. So all of these initiatives in terms of our groundwater management strategies help us to reduce our reliance on imported water while providing a local supply that is more resilient. Also, part of our overall supply strategy, though, is also water use efficiency. I mentioned our early adoption of budget-based rates, as well as our investment in AMI meter technology, which started back in 2008. It was accelerated in 2015 and completed in 2019. There's a lot of benefits to EMWD and our customers through AMI data, providing additional information on water use, as well as coupled with our upgrade to the customer data portal, gives our customers better access on their water use and allows them to make adjustments and improve their water use efficiency. We also see air quality benefits through use of AMI technology in reducing the amount of vehicle trips that are needed to respond to certain types of customer issues. We mentioned the outdoor watering standards. Again, we've been very active and a participant in developing model water efficient landscape ordinances, which for EMWD are currently at 0.5 ET for any development after 2015, well ahead of many other agencies currently trying to navigate and come up with plans to be compliant with the state regulations that will be forthcoming. Non-functional turf, we have removed more than 10 million square feet of non-functional turf in our service area, and we continue to do more on that front, both working with our CII customers in response to the emergency regulations, but also through our Landscapes for Living program, where we help customers identify the programs that are available, as well as devices and other rebates that are available to them. So I mentioned CII emergency regulation response here. Most recently, we did reduce CII customer budgets that have non-functional turf down to an ET of 0.5 to further enforce the state ban. And I also mentioned our climate-appropriate landscaping that we promote through our Landscapes for Living program. We've also partnered with our agricultural community looking for water use efficiency opportunities. And about a year or so ago, we completed a project with the Irrigation Training and Research Center at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, where we worked with agricultural partners within our service area to identify efficiencies in irrigation systems, recommendations for improvements, as well as opportunities for grant funding that our customers in the ag industry can take advantage of. All of these initiatives and commitment to water use efficiency have showed a dramatic decrease in our per capita water use over the years. And again, you are all very familiar with this slide, but we are well below our state compliance target, as well as we have continued a very strong water use efficient commitment by our customers, even since coming out of the last drought. That has resulted also in a dramatic reduction in our reliance on imported water. Back in the 90s, we were almost 70% reliant on imported water. And despite our very intensive population growth, we have actually reduced our reliance on imported water. It now makes up less than 50% of our overall water supply portfolio. We've also taken a variety of actions that as we started those and embarked on those actions, maybe weren't directly with the goal of mitigating climate change. They had a lot of other benefits, but in the context of looking at how these actions have also mitigated and allowed us to adapt to climate change, it's really interesting to see how these all play into the portfolio of projects and the overall benefit it has provided to our communities. We took early action to reduce greenhouse gases. We became a member of the Climate Action Registry in 2006. We've invested in a variety of projects to adapt to climate change, including the resilient water supplies that we already talked about and the landscape changes. Again, those are all things that help us be more resilient in a changing climate. We've also invested in projects that do actually mitigate climate change, including maximizing our energy independence, reducing GHG gas emissions, as well as advancing policies and strategies to address climate adaptation. In 2014, we completed an energy management plan that identified a portfolio of projects to reduce existing and future energy use. And we have been implementing those programs since the completion of that plan. And that really set us up, again, in a really good position for complying with future regulations. In terms of complying with the 2030 regulations, we're pretty much there with just the actions that we have taken and keeping our business as usual. So really set us up for being proactive instead of reactive to those regulations. And most recently, you adopted our 2022 Climate Action Plan, and we're currently working on advancing that toward a fully qualified climate action plan. We've made a lot of achievements towards energy independence. We have advanced solar energy as well as other initiatives, including fuel cell installations, as well as microturbines. Here's just a summary of that renewable energy portfolio. And with those investments that we've made over the years, we now anticipate an annual production of almost 60 million kilowatt hours. Not only does this have the benefit, though, of energy independence and fitting in the category of mitigating climate change, it also has an economic and a financial benefit to our customers, in which we have secured contracts to sell back renewable energy credits, which is anticipated to generate $1 million in revenue. We've also taken initiatives to increase our efficiency in terms of vehicles. Back in 2009, we did implement a GPS fleet management product, which helped to reduce vehicle miles traveled, but also gained other benefits, including improved response time to emergencies, increased productivity, as well as diagnostics to help us with maintenance on our fleet. Fleet electrification is also a strategic priority. As you know, there are regulations associated with this. We do have existing infrastructure for EV charging, but we also have investments and partnerships that will allow us to expand that into the future. We've established many partnerships within our community and beyond. One of those partnerships was with the Bureau of Reclamation that began in 1990. Which facilitated the construction of our 60 acres of wetlands, which is continued to be used for research and also for bird habitat. And President Pauly, this is a screenshot of the webcam at the wetlands.
All right.
We've also partnered with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife for providing recycled water to the San Jacinto Wildlife Area. This was the first wildlife area to receive recycled water for environmental habitat. This was, I think, my favorite initiative that I uncovered. I thought this was really unique to EMWD, work to preserve bees, and that we actually offer a service to our customers that if they come across the beehive in their water meter box, that they are encouraged to contact EMWD for safe removal of the beehive, and that those are removed and provided either for educational purposes or for agricultural purposes.
I'm not mistaken, we have a beehive contractor here at district,
yes, yes, we do. We also have several partnerships within the community that are mutually beneficial. We partner with the Saboba Band of Huenu Indians in terms of looking for mutually beneficial land exchanges. Daniel highlighted the sewer service partnership that we are currently embarking on with Saboba, as well as a longstanding partnership in terms of groundwater management. Also, Lake Hemet Municipal Water District and County of Riverside, where we have partnerships that enhance economic development in the service area. Our partnerships have also resulted in more than $700 million in external funding being secured by EMWD over the past several decades. Again, this external funding has allowed us to advance very innovative programs and initiatives, but also provides an economic and a financial benefit to our customers. So in summary, there's a lot of benefits to our longstanding commitment to sustainability and resiliency, the effective management of the natural resources for our community, greater water supply independence and future reliability, our ability to secure external funding and partnerships, savings to ratepayers through purchases by reducing our purchases of imported water, the electrical energy cost savings, as well as the monetary value in the sale of our renewable energy credits. This also allows us to really have a great story and positive message to share with our communities, demonstrates industry leadership, as well as supports our advocacy and instills public trust. So what can we do with this information? So we already highlight these types of achievements when we pursue external grant funding, so we will continue to do that. But we also want to update our outreach and marketing materials to provide really a cheat sheet, if you will, for all of these different categories of resiliency and sustainability actions at EMWD has been successful in achieving. Director Record also asked that we further look into whether or not there's some additional benefits. An example was carbon sequestration with our work in with our agricultural partners as well as with the wetlands. And also to, as I mentioned, continue to leverage these achievements to benefit EMWD's customers through external funding and also explore additional potential for environmental offset credit. And with that, be happy to answer any questions.
President Pauly, if I can add, and thank you, Linnea, for a great presentation. I know Jolene, as well as April, played a big part in putting all this information together as well. I just want to say it's really impressive when you start looking at the aggregate of what this organization has done over the last not only years, but decades. And, you know, we often look at each initiative on its own, but when you look at everything that we have invested in, everything that we've undertaken, we believe it's an opportunity to really share our experience and our success with the water industry. And frankly, not many in the water industry have done this extent of investment in sustainability and resiliency. So that is one of the objectives that we want to pursue, and also really leverage this in the pursuit of additional funding. When we are back in Washington, D.C., and when we're up in Sacramento, highlight our successes and what can be done. And frankly, what is a win-win arrangement for everyone, including our customers, who realize the cost savings for many of these initiatives. So I just want to compliment Dr. Record for bringing this to our attention, and really compliment staff for compiling all this info. And in terms of sharing the information, on February 10th, we will be hosting Metropolitan's Chief of Sustainability and Resiliency, Ms. Liz Crossan, will be here. We're going to share with her a lot of the information and provide her a tour. So that's part of the exchange of information. Thank you, President Pauly.
Comments from the board, Director Armstrong.
Just want to echo what General Manager just said. This is a tremendous compilation of decades of work that is just something to be very, very proud of from all of the staff, current and present, and the previous boards that have, you know, made all of these initiatives happen. It's, I don't know how you take all this information and put it into a way that our public can understand, even, you know, or if they even care, you know, about all this, but it's just such a great story. I look forward to seeing what you come up with for marketing this and sharing it, because it is really a great story to tell, but it's a great job.
Yeah, I agree completely with Jeff. You know, I heard his planning committee, and it was great then, it's great now. I mean, it's like, everybody can do this. Other districts can do this. It's just having the will to do it and be willing to spend the money to do all these things. And we've just said, hey, we're going to do it. And look at what we've got now. It's just a fabulous story.
So two quick thoughts here. First, great presentation. Again, I do appreciate Director Record leading the board to get someone to compile all the things we have done, because we have done a lot. But as far as marketing to the public, the other area I think we need to market to is younger folks today looking in their career path. They're not just looking for the salary and the retirement. They want to, you know, the ones I've come across, want to help, you know, preserve the environment. And I think so, as we're recruiting people for Eastern, I think this would be a great story to tell younger people trying to get into, you know, the water industry, that you're also here doing a great environmental service. And it's something that we really put a lot of effort into here at Eastern. And then finally, a lot of people always ask me what the E stands for, so I'm going to start telling them it's environmental. No longer Eastern, it's going to be the environmental as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, thank you so much. Great job to Jolene, April, the entire team that put this together, and we will look forward to more. With that, why don't we take about a 5-minute break before we do our strategic priorities?
Wait for Dave to come back.
Oh.
Austin is back, so we will go on to item B, which are our strategic plan and priorities update.
Thank you, President Pauly, members of the board. We wanted to bring forward to you an update on our efforts to advance our strategic plan priorities and initiatives. And you're very familiar with our strategic plan. As you recall, last year in January, we adopted our updated triennial strategic plan. And so far, we've made a lot of progress. We've completed, as I'll get into, a number of the strategic priorities that we had identified. We're adding additional priorities. As you know, this is a living document. This is not a static document on the shelf. We actually use this document to guide our tactics and our strategies, and it evolves and it embodies what this organization's priorities are all about. So our current triennial strategic plan, as I mentioned, was adopted last January. It starts off with our standards of excellence. And from that, we develop our strategic priorities. And then it cascades into very actionable initiatives and projects. And specifically, we have a list that gets updated. I meet with our managers and executive team on a quarterly basis to review progress. And we identify who is lead on these initiatives and projects, what are the target dates, and what are we going to achieve by those target dates. So when we updated this plan last January, we rolled over 35 priorities. And often these priorities are multi-year initiatives. And then we added 22 that were identified as part of the new plan for a total of 57 action items. And so far this year, we've completed 10. As I'll get into shortly, we're on track to also complete an additional 25 by the end of this calendar year. So as I mentioned, our efforts on the strategic plan are organized by standards of excellence and strategic priorities. And as you're very familiar with our strategic priorities, they are to provide highly reliable and cost-effective water, wastewater, and recycled water service, protect the public and environmental health, provide superior customer service, invest in sound planning and operational efficiency, fiscal responsibility and appropriate investment, be and continue to be an exemplary employer, and effective communication, advocacy, and community partnerships. So I'm just gonna highlight some of the changes that have occurred over the past year. Under the strategic priority of highly reliable and cost-effective water and wastewater recycled water service, as you know, we completed our Paris II desalinization program with the commissioning of the desalter last year, but that is not the the conclusion of our efforts on the desalinization program. In fact, if you look further down the list, under the item 1.07, we are continuing our work with the Army Corps of Engineers and others to look at additional siting of brackish wells and expansion of our desalter program. So although one phase of the program has been completed, we are continuing work to expand the facilities and expand the program. We also added two new strategic priorities to this list, as the board is familiar with, our joint agency water supply resiliency effort with the neighboring agencies, and then our recently established Doheny Ocean Desal Initiative with establishment of an ad hoc committee and an initiative to look at that opportunity. Continuing on with the same priority, we also have added another strategic priority, and that is to promote water use efficiency through more accurate water budgets. And in working with our water planning and water resources conservation staff, we're in the process of updating our aerial imagery so that we can more accurately provide outdoor water budgets for our customers. So that is going to be a multi-year initiative to update those water budgets accordingly. Under protection of public and environmental health, I mentioned earlier this morning the PFAS survey. There's a number of initiatives surrounding PFAS, obviously regulations, but beyond the anticipated further regulations associated with PFAS, we're seeking additional funding.
We're also seeking partnerships and also potential legal action to recover damages that we may be exposed to. So there's a number of strategies and initiatives surrounding the regulation of PFAS. In terms of superior customer service, we did complete our biannual customer survey. We're also embarking on a customer preference campaign. We need to better understand our customers' preference relative to communicating with them. Is that email, text, phone calls? Having that data, having that additional data from our customer base will allow us to better provide for outreach and specifically targeted advocacy on issues and initiatives. Under the strategic priority of sound planning and operational efficiencies, we have a number of active initiatives. And as listed here, one of them, we will be coming back to the board soon, and that's the battery storage initiative that we're working on, where we're getting ready to initiate construction on those facilities. So we'll be back in front of the board to update the board accordingly. Also under sound planning and operational efficiency, a number of strategic priorities have been completed. The heavy fleet CNG conversion, we updated the equipment and our capabilities at our shop to be able to serve and service CNG fleet vehicles. We also completed our pump and motor vibration monitoring efforts. And as the board has been briefed in closed session, we've also advanced and completed our cyber security initiatives accordingly. We have added one new strategic priority, and that's our physical security risk assessment. In discussions with President Pauly and other board members, we think it's important that we advance a comprehensive assessment for our headquarters and our treatment plants to ensure that we have adequate physical security of our campuses. Under fiscal responsibility and appropriate investment, we've completed the recycled water rate study last year that you're familiar with. We also established our Section 115 trust. So those initiatives were completed. A number of other initiatives are ongoing as identified on this slide. Under exemplary employer, again, I've talked to you recently about our safety culture and the need to continue with our emphasis and our information to our employees and the training efforts with our employees. So one of the things that we've added is safety onboarding process to new hires, making sure they understand fully our culture and our policies and our practices when it comes to safety. Under effective communication, advocacy, and community, we completed the comprehensive outreach and communication master plan that you've been briefed on. One thing we did do, looking at advocacy, in the past, we used to have a failing water system governance legislation that the district has previously supported. We consolidated that with an initiative that is identified as 7.23. That's the state framework and legislation on mandatory consolidations and water supply assessments. So we are very much active in Sacramento and promoting sound policy and providing support and information and testimony when appropriate. And related, frankly, to this effort is our ongoing efforts and discussions with the city of Paris in terms of consolidation of that system. We also, under this strategic priority, we completed our Latino community outreach initiative as well. Again, under effective communication advocacy, there's a number of other initiatives underway. One of them that you're familiar with is an all-functional turf management strategies. We have partnered with UC Riverside to look at a financing program, and soon we'll have Professor Kurt Schwabe come out and present to the board his findings and potential recommendations. So in summary, we've made a lot of progress over the past year since the board has adopted our triennial strategic plan. We've completed 10 high priority strategic priorities. 25 are expected to be completed by the end of this calendar year. And we are making progress on all fronts. We are recommending, and we are moving forward with adding 7 new priorities as identified here. And as I just mentioned, these are all part of what we do, part of our efforts. And as I mentioned, this is a strategic and a living document for us. And with that, myself and the entire team would be more than happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Awesome.
Sure, I have a silly question. Looking at our compressed natural gas for the fleet, just brings to mind the talk about gas stoves producing methane, emitting methane. Does your CNG vehicles emit anything that they'll come after next?
I'm not aware of any, but Dan, you may want to comment on that.
Yeah, essentially, you know, we transitioned to CNG vehicles for our heavy duty fleet beginning probably about a decade ago, and now the regulations are pushing towards that end into electrification. So we will have approximately 30 CNG over their lifespan, which could be years for some, why we needed to make the investment in maintenance facilities. But fortunately, from a fueling perspective, we're able to utilize the SoCal gas facility down the site for CNG. Yeah, that move to electrification is coming. It's next. In fact, our C staff and I attended yesterday at the CARB facility, the Riverside, quite impressive. And again, they were everyone in present was talking about this electric.
Right. Okay. So I understand some service stations that are popping up, at least in the past. I don't know about the last month, were also, you know, had electrical charging and they had CNG.
Correct.
So they'll probably get away with that.
Correct.
Get away from that. Right.
Under the current direction, yes. You know, there is the 2035 governor's direction to phase out the purchase of vehicles for all in 2030.
Phase out gasoline operated.
Correct.
I didn't look at the price driving in over here. Has it jumped?
It significantly.
It
so
has.
Maybe as much as 300% over
wow.
Maybe the last. However, just this morning, I began to hear. As you know, natural gas is market-based. It fluctuates. Drivers for that are significant currently, but we expect it to start probably as soon as next month.
Any other questions? I just want to say to Joe and the entire team, I mean, the role of this board is to set policies and goals for the district, and your job is to execute them. And this report just says you guys are doing a fantastic job of executing the goals and priorities the board set. So I want to
thank you, President
Paul, on behalf of the board for doing that, keeping us in the loop. And, you know, there will be more as we go along, but I'm very pleased with the fact that this district is moving on all the objectives the board set. So thank you very much.
Much appreciated.
All right. We'll go to our receive and file items, such as item number 6 on the agenda. I have a motion by Director Armstrong, second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Cronin?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. That will bring us to our calendar review and Director's attendance reports. Tammy, good morning.
President Pauley, members of the board. I have one event for your consideration this morning. It is the Association of California Water Agencies Spring Conference that is taking place from May 9th through the 11th in Monterey.
March, right?
Okay.
Hey, I'm sorry.
Yes. May 9th through the 11th.
The
did I say March?
Oh, you said May. I said May. I heard March.
Okay. Moving on to page 2. No problem. Is the board's calendar for the next couple of weeks for your review. If anyone has any updates or additions, please let me know. And moving on to page 3, we have a few important dates to remember. First one being the MODOC, Municipal Water District of Orange County's Water Policy Forum, which takes place in Costa Mesa on Thursday, February the 9th. We have General Manager Muwad, Deputy General Manager Nomura, and AGM Volts Alexander expected to attend. Also in, in March 4th through the 8th, which is a Saturday through Wednesday, we have the Water Reuse Symposium. It's taking place in Atlanta, Georgia. And we have General Manager Muwad scheduled to attend that. Followed by the board and committee meetings that are upcoming. Just a special note, as a reminder, actually, for the February 8th Administrative Committee meeting, that was rescheduled. So that is the date, February 8th. And on Thursday, February 9th, we also have the Board Planning Committee meeting, has an earlier start. Just a reminder, it's starting at 3 p.m. on that day. Moving on to page 4, we have our interagency meetings. And another reminder that the February 13th Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District joint meeting has been canceled. And I believe the next meeting I show is scheduled to take place on April 10th. Out of office schedule, we have no one. And the holiday schedule for Monday, February 20th is the President's Day holiday. Any questions or additions?
Tammy, just one minor correction on the planning committee yes. scheduled for February 9th.
Yes.
It should state Director Slauson and Director Record.
Oh, yes, we'll update that. Thank you. Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for that. We'll go to Director's attendance reports. We'll start Director Armstrong.
So the MWD standing committees, I am on the Finance, Audit, Insurance, and Real Property Committee that did meet on January 24th, and it took essentially two actions there. One was to establish a subcommittee, an audit subcommittee, which I am on that committee as the vice chair, and then also a subcommittee on long-term regional planning process and business modeling, which I'm also a member of. And I think that's a real important committee for us to be represented on, because as Joe spoke about the workshop that's coming up in a couple of weeks, I think the chair at Metz and vision is that what comes out of that workshop will come to this committee to kind of spearhead and try to make happen. So I think it's a really important committee to be on, and happy to be part of that committee or subcommittee. I haven't got all the committee, subcommittee, ad hoc things straightened out yet, but and then just one other note. We were contacted by one of the board members representing LA and asking if we would want to participate in doing a joint state water project tour with some of our community stakeholders and leaders. And so we're going to partner with Director Quinn from LA, and I think that's towards the end of March or something that we're trying to make that happen. So that's a good development as well. And then LDCell. We met. One update from there is that the annual conference for CalDESAL is February 16th and 17th, and we will have, I think Greg is going to be there presenting on our groundwater desal projects too to the conference. So, and then the EVMWD interagency, we talked about water supply, we talked about MWD, and we also had a good conversation about recycled water. And also the Highway 74 proposed sewer pipeline, that how we can maybe partner on that and make it more effective and efficient for us all. So my meeting. Oh, and a good meeting with our general manager as well.
Thank you, Director Corona. Okay. I had the opportunity to go on the flight, refueling flight that with March Air Force Base. And that was extremely exciting. If you're going for comfort, all that comfortable, but the excitement just covers that all up. Lie down in the back of that KC-135, and C-17 comes up about 20 feet away. I mean, it's really impressive, and I had a fabulous time. If you ever have an opportunity to go on it, Director Brenda Denstedt from Western was also on the trip, and she was in the other plane. And when I happened to be in the back looking through the window, she was in the other window. So it was exciting. Jeff covered the Elsinore Valley meeting and had a great meeting with the general manager. And that's all I have.
Very good. Thank you for that. And I think I don't want to speak for the rest of the board, but yes, we are jealous. Okay.
So I attend the IE Works board meeting. covering usual stuff. I was not able to go to the Inland Empire Utility Agency reception, but I also on Saturday was at the IE Works open house, which had a lot of good ideas. I look forward to getting a little more involved in IE Works. People from Coachella were out there that were interested in their program too and informed me we'd just stolen one of their employees. So that happens, I guess, in the water industry, but really informative program. And I think they're headed in the right direction. And again, I want to work on this kind of to get younger people from our community, especially folks that may not have from the social economic impacted communities and find pathways into the water industry for them as part of, it kind of goes along with our strategic plan. And so I want to continue working with them. That's my report, Director Slauson.
Yes, I attended a meeting with Joe and we went over a number of issues. I'm sorry, I did not attend a meeting with Joe. I did attend the Western meeting, a joint meeting with Western Municipal, discussed a number of issues. Brenda was online, and I think Barner was there. Attended the chamber wake up breakfast. Mayor Cabrera gave his first presentation as the mayor to the chamber. The National Guard was honored that day, and California Baptist University representative was there, one of the teams, I guess, speaking about the bill. And attended the Chamber of Commerce installation dinner, was sworn back in as a director. Citizen of the Year was Jesus Hogin from Marina Valley Unified School District. And Supervisor Gutierrez was there, and Mayor Cabrera and Chairman Baca Senna.
All right, very good. Director's comments for future agenda items? None. I'd just like to note for the next meeting, I will be participating telephonically, and Director Vice President Corona, I lead the meeting. Council, I understand we have no closed session today. All right, then we will stand adjourned until Wednesday, February 15th at 9 a.m. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.